This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Scientific progress is not only changing the life sciences sector in Europe, but also the investment and financial communities that nurture the life sciences there. The keynote address at DIA Europe 2020, which will convene in March in Brussels, will focus on the intersections of science and business and will feature a scientist turned investor, Mr. Joep Meijers, who will share the scientific investor's perspective on the current state of Europe's pharmaceutical, biotechnology, device, and diagnostic sectors with a presentation titled Putting Europe in the Fast Lane. The fundamental question is, how can one raise these sectors to greater levels of innovation, attractiveness, and development speed without sacrificing science or ethics or losing sight of patients in need? I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the DIA Global Forum. Mr. Meijers joins me today to share his thoughts on the life sciences business climate in Europe. He currently serves as chief financial officer at PureTech, a listed biopharmaceutical company that focuses on developing medicines for devastating diseases, including cancer, central nervous system disease, and immunological disorders. Before joining PureTech, Joep spent 11 years as portfolio manager at Life Sciences Partners, a transatlantic investor group with exclusive focus on healthcare and life sciences. Thank you for joining us today, Joep, and welcome.
To begin, as an investor with a strong scientific background, how do you view the relationship between the healthcare ecosystem and the investors? Is this relationship, important as it is, sound and productive, or could it be improved? And DIA Europe, particularly this year's edition and its focus on Europe in the fast lane, is this relevant to this relationship?
Yes, thank you, Alberto, and it's very nice to join you today. There's a couple of questions you asked me, maybe starting with the investor side. I will talk about that during my presentation, but actually investors play a very large role, particularly in the earlier and innovative phases of R&D in healthcare. If you simply look at the metrics and the numbers, and you look at the amount of cash that's being put to work by investors, it just dwarfs the R&D budgets of the largest pharmaceutical companies. So whether you like it or not, at some point, if you're active in this space, you'll probably be interacting with the investors. And we're not the easiest people around, quite demanding what we want and what we do. But I do think it's an integral part of the ecosystem. And your second question, as it relates to how are the interactions between different stakeholders and investors? And I think there's a lot of room for improvement there. This is why I'm very excited, actually, to be doing the keynote at the conference, because you guys put together a very broad group of different stakeholders. And I think that is essential. That is essential because at the end of the day, I am convinced that what we develop in healthcare and life sciences is very important to many people. And so to be able to just benefit from each other's knowledge and views and experience so we don't make certain mistakes or so we're all up to speed on what relevant products could be. If from the investment side, I invest in something and it actually materializes into a product, I think it's a very good idea to then know that that's a relevant product. And so when it finally gets to patients, it's relevant to patients, relevant to stakeholders. Yes, I feel that there's quite a bit of room for improvement, but I'm also very pleased to then be a part of that, hopefully a part of that improvement via my lecture at the conference.
You mentioned improvement is needed. Can you comment on that? You said that investors are not the easiest people to deal with. One can imagine that scientists and R&D people may not be that easy either. What do you think needs to be improved in that relationship specifically? Are there any misperceptions on either side about the other side?
I think there are. And I've seen this now over the past couple of decades that I've been in. I did a PhD in 2000. That was the end of my academic career. And I went into banking and the investment side. I'm currently with the company PureTech in Boston. Look, I think there's a lot of synergy. There's a couple of, I guess, conditions if you want to make this efficient. First, be open to learn from the other side. I have experienced that firsthand. I've been involved in quite a few interactions with different stakeholders in Europe, as well as in the US, in Boston. And I always learn a lot. You know, I mean, there are certain things that obviously you can and cannot discuss if you're talking with people on the payer side or regulatory side or patient side, but there's also a lot of things that you can discuss and there's a lot of room to learn because I also feel it's relevant for other stakeholders to understand maybe how an investor looks at this space given the huge amounts of cash that are being put into work. And for me, it's very good to understand how people perceive relevance. what is a real unmet need? And there's a lot you can learn by asking different stakeholders. Yes, there's also some misperceptions. And yes, it's a fact that these interactions don't always go well. But I've been very positively influenced by many of the meetings that I've had with different stakeholders. And I would encourage people to do that, because this is part of the solution, I feel, in our industry, that we need to understand each other a little bit better.
Is there an impression in healthcare, in R&D, that investors are in a terrible hurry and will not wait out the pace of science and to wait for science to actually deliver what science tries to deliver? That investors have too short a runway, too short term a horizon to really wait for science to do its work well?
I think there's a lot of different investor strategies, and you're absolutely right. There are quite a few investors out there that look at this quite short term and are very concerned with, if I put money to work today, when can I make my exit? What's the return on that projected return? Now, any investor who tells you that that's not important is lying. For any investor, this is important. These metrics are important. However, the only way I have ever looked at this space, the only way I can invest in it, is taking a more long-term perspective. That is essential to me. If you want to know about more short-term strategies, there's other investors to talk to. That wouldn't be me. But the way I look at it, this is a long-term approach, and the timelines are long, and you're developing very relevant product. But I'm also convinced that if you focus on investing in things that are relevant, that address an unmet need, that really go after patient populations with very suboptimal treatment options. If I'm talking therapeutics, but of course, in the diagnostic side, there's a lot to be done as well. You know, if you do that and you allow yourself to be a bit ahead of the curve and have a long-term perspective, the returns are great. The returns are great. So even if I'm only a hard-nosed return-driven investor, it probably still makes sense. At least in my mind, it always made sense to look at this in the long term. But for me, it's more than that. I understand if you're an investor in this space, you need to generate return. But if you can also, at the same time, generate some impact and really invest in things that are meaningful, that's what gets me going.
From an investor's perspective, conversely, I'll ask the question in the opposite way. Is there a sense that scientists and healthcare developers left to their own devices will just take too long, and that a little investor pressure and focus will actually help move things faster for everybody's benefit, including patient benefit?
I think so. I think that's a very relevant point. And that's one of the things that on the investment side we do every day. Now, I'm not saying that always goes well. And of course, some of the timelines are what they are. This is the sector that we're in. But sometimes to be disciplined and focused, and having seen some things go well before, other things not go very well, all of that can be very helpful in terms of accelerating some of the R&D that we currently have. So I agree with you. And this is exactly what I meant to say, that maybe this is something that if you've been in the space for 20 years investing in it, you've seen a few times. You've done things that went very well, things that didn't go very well. You learned from that. And some of those things I'm always very happy to share, because that goes after, at the end of the day, the efficiency of the R&D process. And I believe, given that the vast majority of diseases today cannot be adequately treated, if at all, some additional efficiency definitely helps.
Your message, if I may summarize, seems to be, if the two sides, investors and healthcare product developers, if they understand each other better and understand each other's priorities and needs better, everybody will win. Is that fundamentally your message?
Look, I'm not trying to make this sound naive or anything, but I do feel there's a lot of room for improvement there. And yes, you know, I'm always careful saying everybody will win, because that's kind of still the space that we're in, and some of these deficits you see every day. I'm careful expressing myself like that. But I do feel that there's a lot of room for improvement, increased efficiency by doing so. Absolutely.
Patients, of course, are the ultimate beneficiaries of these efforts. And so, speaking of patients, the way this ecosystem pursues innovation should, in theory, go hand in hand with patients' hopes and needs. From your experience, is this in fact happening?
It is happening to some extent, but this is clearly an area where there's huge room for improvement. And again, my own experience in that regard has been very helpful to me, meaning that I have had some of the best interactions with people who represent either groups of patients or themselves may suffer from a certain disease, because they will be able to tell you things that I myself could never ever think of about how it is to live with a disease and what are relevant improvements that patients find relevant and what are some of the things that are not ideal with the treatment paradigm, if there is a treatment paradigm. I've been lucky to interact with some really amazing people in that regard. And again, you hear things that you don't hear from the best treating physician out there. No matter how many patients she or he treats, if you live with a certain disease, at least in my experience, you'll hear very different things. And I think, yes, there's a lot of focus on this. Actually, also within PureTech, my current company, we try to engage very broadly as well. However, there is room for improvement there, because at the end of the day, I still feel that some of the things that you get to see, if you look at building companies or investing in companies, are still too incremental in terms of the potential added benefit that they bring. And that's something that I'm just not that interested in. I don't think current times call for incremental innovation. But still, sometimes, let me put it this way, in this industry, we tell the end user what's good for them. Isn't that crazy? So I feel that there's clearly some room for improvement. And I'm, of course, generalizing, and there's a lot of groups that already do this to a high extent, but I feel that there's clearly room for improvement there. And actually, Europe, I found to be a very good ground for that. There are some very strong organizations who really intend to get benefit for the patients they represent. And it's been delightful to interact with some of those and just learn.
I do want to talk about Europe with you. Before I get to that, let me ask you, how do investors capture the voice of the patient? How do investors satisfy themselves that they've heard enough from whatever the patient target population is to satisfy themselves that they understand the true patient need? Do you talk to one patient, 10 patients, 1,000 patients?
Yeah, this very much is case by case. So I've been involved in things where we would reach out, for example, to certain patient organizations. And again, I found in Europe there are some very good ones. And people are willing. People are willing to talk. As long as you approach them in a certain respectful way and you're just saying, look, I'm here to learn, people are willing to talk. And you find that if you talk to people who represent certain patient groups, you can really learn a lot, because they may not suffer for the disease themselves, fortunately, in most cases. But they, of course, represent patients suffering from a certain disease. And you can actually learn a lot from people like that. And again, they're very approachable and they're very willing to share insights and their experiences. I have also been in situations where you have direct interaction with people suffering from a disease. That is very powerful. And it's something that you have to do in a very modest way, I feel. But again, there are people who are very willing to explain what it is to live with a certain disease. How do you know that you've done enough to really satisfy that? There is no such thing on the investor side, because I can always find more information, additional information. But at some point, if you're investing in this space, you need to put your money to work or not. And you have to be satisfied with the diligence process that you ran. Honestly, what I just told you is something I had to wake up to. As recently as maybe 5-6 years ago, I wouldn't interact with patient organizations or with patients. But by some of the things that I've learned and some of the things I've been involved with, I have woken up. I understand that this is something that you need to do. And at the end of the day, and this is again a bit my personal motivation, if you can bring something that's relevant for patients, why wouldn't you do that, right?
No, it's not just you. It's you and us and the rest of the world that has awakened to this new reality that the patient voice is a major determinant of understanding, certainly, a possibly major determinant of success. Turning to Europe now, would you say that Europe is fertile ground for innovation with a purpose, not just within biopharma, but also for players working to leverage biopharma innovation beyond biopharma?
Absolutely. And we don't need to be shy. Sometimes in Europe, we're a little bit shy. And in my talk, I'll give some examples of some really amazing things that come out of Europe these days. It's coming of age. I mean, there is a lot going on. I'm not going to talk too much about it now, but I'll share some things that are really amazing and that not everybody has seen. May not know or know that all of that came out of Europe. In terms of the interplay between healthcare and other disciplines like artificial intelligence, there's a lot. The good thing is Europe, in terms of science and clinics and academic prowess, is at par with the US. There is no doubt in my mind. Obviously, the total budgets that we have available in Europe are smaller than in the US, but the fundamentals in Europe are very strong. And some amazing things have come out and are coming out all from Europe. And I'll comment on some of those in my talk. But absolutely, very fertile ground and also very timely. Europe is leading in a couple of areas, and I will comment on those areas as well.
Is the biggest driver of competitiveness the transition from raw potential to real-world applicability? And if so, what is Europe doing to facilitate this and even accelerate this transition?
So real-world applicability comes back to what we were discussing before, right? Who determines that something is actually making a dent once it's approved in the real world? Well, that would be, is it relevant to patients? That would be, will doctors prescribe it? That will be, is somebody's going to pay for it, depending on the price and all these things. I think that's the only way forward. And that's why I think it makes sense to engage at an early enough stage. What is the value of a product that's quite often against the odds in this sector makes it and gets to patients and then doesn't make a dent whatsoever? It's not being used. What's the relevance of that? I think real-world applicability and use and impact that products have is essential. Otherwise, we're just wasting each other's time.
Real world has become a prefix for both data and evidence. Real world data, real world evidence, etc., which is commonly understood is important to payers before they make reimbursement decisions. How do investors look at real world data and evidence as to their importance to investors' decisions to invest?
Well, you better understand, in my opinion, how payers perceive all this, right? You better understand. Ignore that at your own peril. You better understand, because this day and age, again, it's clear that our budgets in healthcare are already constrained. And so there is a clear need to address that. And there's a clear need to understand what is a relevant product that people are willing to pay for at the end of the day. It comes back to our earlier point. You better engage at the time when you can still, you know, make some decisions to kind of steer that.
Yup, these are all my questions. I appreciate the wonderful, illuminating conversation and your insights. Thanks very much.
Pleasure talking to you. The outline that I just gave, those will be some of the things, but I will give a couple of more tangible examples. And it was fun just reminding myself of some of the things I was involved with as an investor, but also where these things are now and the impact that it makes. I mean, some of the most relevant products came into Europe, and I won't be shy about that.
For DIA Global Forum, this is Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.